You're listening to episode 26 of the National Centre for Writing podcast with me, Simon Jones. Every week we talk about the writing life and discover exciting new projects. It's Wednesday, 19th of December 2018, here at Dragon Hall in Norwich, and this week we're chatting with Tamsin Flower about arts funding, what it is, why it's important, and how to get it. Her latest project, a cross-form video poetry cycle called The Lives of F, was made possible thanks to funding from Arts Council England, and that's where our conversation begins. Tamsin, thank you for coming into Dragon Hall.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, so your background is as a writer and theatre director, is that right?
Theatre director, theatre producer and writer. I think it's very hard to stick to one thing if you have artistic sensibilities.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask about. So you work across lots of different forms and you also have interests in all kinds of areas. Yeah. So how do you manage your time in terms of deciding what to work on at any particular given moment?
I think thinking about your capacity as an artist is really important. When you apply for Arts Council funding, for instance, I think you're really thinking about how to shape your life. You're covering money for the costs of your time. You're thinking about how you can shape your life in terms of the support structures that you have, who's going to give you what resources, and how you can best apply those to reach your audience. But going back to the heart of the question, I tend to take the concept of the piece and then think about how to best deliver it to a certain type of audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wrote on your website about comfort zones and kind of outgrowing them.
Yeah.
And is that part of why you kind of work in all these different areas, in that it's kind of as an artist or even just as a person, you want to always be trying something new?
Mm. I think that relates to the subject matter because I always work on sort of socially driven concepts. Mm-hmm. So naturally, if you want to reach people in the community, you might push yourself in a different direction to working in a proscenium arch theatre context and reaching established audiences. Mm-hmm. And yes, I'm very excited by pushing my comfort zones. And I think you probably get something more raw from an artist or writer when they do that, even if it's a little crude or naive because they're coming to contact with something for the first time. You definitely get something quite raw and enthused.
Yes. Yeah, I think that sense of exploration that you get when you're trying something new comes across to the audience
as
well. Yeah,
it should do.
Yeah. So specifically about the Lives of F project, can you just introduce the concept of it?
Yeah. So obviously film poetry is like this burgeoning area. And I'd call these poems, I'd call them poetry films, actually. The six of them, they're a life cycle, and they follow the life of F, who is alternately a man and boy, woman and girl. And we trace them through the chapters of their life in each poetry film. So they're narrative, and they're not so much sort of illustrative in terms of the visuals. I'm not demonstrating a voice talking about, I don't know, a tree by showing photographs of a tree. They're very much a patchwork of cultural films, footage, images that are more sort of ambient and background. So I digress. But Lives of F, it does explore gender, the experiences of gender, different sort of touch points in life. But also, most strongly, it sort of reflects on performance and how our lives are performances. Each poetry film has a different metaphor, for instance. So the first one focuses on synchronized swimming to talk about birth and conception from the inside of the body out. The second one describes trampolining and the freedom of adolescence once you break through barriers. And then we get to acting around young adulthood. So that's all about the masks that we wear and try on and discard. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
And why make it this multi-platform project? So there's the poetry element, but obviously this is film poetry that you're exploring. What was it that drew you towards the film aspect?
Yeah, I think it was many things. Obviously, the digital realm is a new realm in terms of poetry. And I think there's been some really interesting sort of development schemes and programs developed to make new work. But I'm also aware that we haven't really done much work as a sector in developing audiences for that. So as someone who works in engagement and is interested in audiences, I thought it would be a great experiment to see how I could plan digitally to share these poems. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm aware, and I learnt this with Ross Sutherland, who is a great mentor on this project. His discussions were very lengthy and quite rich. His main comment to me was that I need to simplify my metaphors, which are very compact. However, I didn't quite want to kill all the darlings and kind of scrape out all of the messiness of me and my voice. So visuals gave me, you know, an opportunity to, you know, further guide the audience by hand and say, this is kind of what I'm talking about. This can give you a clearer metaphor visually, and this is more oblique verbally. But together, they should guide you along your way through the story.
And in terms of your work, which is heavily rooted in metaphor, how do you react? Like, well, it's more when an audience encounters your work, you can try and direct them and navigate them, but inevitably they're going to have their own response to it. And
yeah.
How do you kind of respond to that collision of your ideas and intent with whatever an audience is going to take away
from
it?
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful and it's very exciting. And I think one of the most fruitful times in my life was when I taught a play about mental health, which was quite challenging, to different venues from Camden People Theatre to a community centre in Westminster. And people who hadn't attended a theatre event before went, people who knew the scene inside out attended, and, you know, variety of responses, but all deeply interested. So it's good to see the themes there. Mm. I don't get particularly offended if people don't latch onto exactly what I had in mind. I think it's quite healthy to assume that people will read different things into it. And as long as the main messages are coming through, I guess you're succeeding. I don't think you can ever make a perfect piece of theatre. I don't think you can ever fulfil all of your aspirations for a piece in one outing. But yeah, audiences are glorious, and we want diverse audiences, and so you'll have diverse reactions, and that's great.
In terms of film poetry, you talked about expanding and finding new audiences, and is the hope that film audiences will find poetry for the first time, or poetry readers will discover film and what that offers, or a bit of both?
I think it's a bit of everything, and I don't know whether this is cunning or not, but the original plan was to engage fans of the metaphors, so synchronized swimming, trampolining, acting, mm-hmm. circus, with the poetry films. So we'll see how that pans out in the new year when I start releasing most of the films. So yes, I think the way that we grow, you know, poetry and literature is by tapping into, you know, different groups, different communities, mm-hmm. To make it all the more interesting and relevant rather than sort of, you know, isolated. And I guess I'm really going off on one here, but looking back at, you know, the more fine art forms, the really kind of old school established ones, like, you know, opera, let's take opera, that was like a hybrid of Greek theatre originally, and sort of chamber music, whatever, and that became a new exciting art form, and then that, you know, the musical emerged from that. And I think, you know, as we go on, we're creating more hybrid, you know, products. I guess an example of that is the fashion at the moment for sort of documentary live art theatre, if you like. There's lots of strong, you know, female duos who tour theatres making pieces that are topical and sort of jump in and out of life writing and fiction, and sort of current affairs. So that's something very hybrid that's popular at the moment. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess we will continue to do that, this sort of cross-fertilisation.
Yeah, rather than staying within that comfort zone, I suppose.
Yeah.
Coming back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of kind of multi-platform working, where you're not just having to focus on the quality of the poetry, you're also having to produce videos. How has that been in terms of having to learn new kind of formal languages and just purely technical exercises in terms of how to edit film and that kind of
yeah.
thing? How's that all worked?
Yeah,
the process?
Hilarious. Really hilarious. Because apart from anything, talk about wanting to push your own boundaries. I'm dyspraxic. So there is a slight delay between my brain and my my body doing multitasky things. So it particularly kicks into gear when editing. So what should have been probably about three long sessions of learning how to use Final Cut Pro ended up being a more drawn out process. But I learned to be a bit patient with myself with the help of a tutor. Cambridge TV School have been excellent and very helpful in that sense. I sort of dipped into their Saturday programme and I've had some one-on-one sessions. And I think it just sort of goes to prove that if you have the patience to apply yourself, you can pretty much do anything. Yes. with an understanding tutor.
It's a particular challenge because writing, generally, you learn to write at quite a young age.
Yeah.
And then obviously what you do with that writing can be massively varied, and that's where skill comes in, and the more artistic side. But the process of just writing down on some paper or onto a computer is kind of, that's never the challenging part. Whereas with filmmaking, there's so much technical boundaries and hurdles to get past before you even get to the point where you can start creating the thing you want to make.
Yeah, and it helps you make incisive choices, because if it's taking such an effort to make, you know, one move, one effect, then you really have to choose the right effect.
With the videos, are they newly shot material or found footage or a bit of both?
Mostly they're found footage. I haven't made the last ones yet, the last two. But I'm very interested in the sort of the cultural field of Britain and Englishness and what we associate with that. And so having sort of archival footage and a feel of sort of nostalgia and a vintage aspect to it is kind of important to what I want to explore.
Something else I read on your website was you talking about the capacity for readers slash listeners slash viewers to process information, and how that's quite different in written form compared to video, compared to audio. And how have you, what have you found out as you've been working on the project in terms of how the different forms kind of get into people's brains?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm interested in cross-fertilising conventions, and that's one of the main themes of this multi-platform writing project. And I think one of the most interesting things I've discovered is about proximity. So creating the illusion of sort of distance or closeness between sort of the narrator and, you know, the audience, the subject and the audience. Using stage directions in the film poems, I think, has been quite effective in terms of creating distance, and perhaps, we'll see what the reactions are, helping the audience look at these people as subjects rather than getting so close that they're just reacting emotionally. I suppose that's going back to the old sort of theatre term of alienation, distancing people from the action in order to make them reflect on it and what it means.
Yeah,
that's one interesting thing.
Yes, absolutely. So more practically, I'd love to talk about the Arts Council England funding that you've had for this and prior projects, and how grants for the arts work, because I think it's something that will probably interest most people listening to the podcast, but it's not necessarily something people will know about. I was wondering, in terms of your career, what those grants have enabled you to do?
Oh,
which is possibly too big a question.
But a tremendous amount, which is a great thing to be able to say, because obviously, you know, the Arts Council has a really important function in our country in the fabric of culture. And it's interesting at this point that funding, we need to justify funding in terms of engagement numbers, and particularly, you know, what audiences we're reaching out to. Because my interest is expanding in that area. But yes, it's meant a lot. I think professionalising your practice means the world to someone who wants to be part of the cultural dialogue. And if you're given funding to do that, then it's, you know, someone basically saying to you, you are a professional artist, your work matters. Take yourself a bit seriously, which is quite hard, because obviously when you grow into being artistic, into being a writer, into being a theatre maker, you'll come across lots of negative beliefs about how valid that is or whether it's worth spending your time on that. But then when somebody gives you a framework through which to take yourself seriously, then you start reframing yourself. And I, Shane Chambu, actually, he's a dance artist, sat me down in the National Theatre before I made my first application and said, your work's important. You have to apply for funding. You're an artist, you take yourself seriously, your work's important. But who would give me funding to do anything? You can't think like that. And he's right. I'd say the same thing to anyone. So it gives you a structure through which to take your art seriously, mm-hmm. initially.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I think because you have to convince yourself of that before people,
doing
almost.
Anything. Yeah. And then it gives you all the practical things like support, whether that's, you know, pastoral or mentoring or space or, I don't know, technical equipment. But the one thing about it that can be challenging for artists and imaginative people who think laterally is the fact that it's so strategic. You have to be a strategist to write one. And I think this a bit like the filmmaking, it's a skill that can be learned. But I think it needs to be emphasized to perhaps younger artists or emerging ones that, you know, just think about, you know, plotting out what you want to do strategically, mm-hmm. and it's not a scary thing, and there's probably someone around who will help you.
Yeah. So at what point in a project's inception, when does applying for funding become appropriate or relevant? Like, how defined does the thing have to be?
Ah, I see. So how, that's an interesting question. How much is a project defined by the funding application process and structure? And at what point? I guess it's different for everyone. But for me, I think at the point where I have a desperate sort of urge to make the thing, that's when I'll start an application. And then the rest will be formulated around that sort of impulse, mm-hmm. if you like. And then I guess it's a conversation between the two things, because if I come across a section like, I don't know, partnerships, and then I have to think, oh God, you know, I have to make a couple of partnerships to make this a worthy application. And then suddenly you think of, you know, two ideal organisations that could actually add a totally different dimension to what you were thinking about. And then it becomes a much more multi-pronged, mm-hmm. interesting thing.
Yeah, and that comes back to what you were saying about taking yourself and the work seriously, because as soon as you start thinking about partnerships and working with other people, then that does mean that you're doing that.
Yeah, absolutely, because you have to give other people quality as much as they have to give you quality.
Yeah. I sometimes find with, particularly with creative projects, that it can be partway through it, or, you know, halfway into the process, where some of the best ideas come along, and you don't always know what a thing is before you start doing it. So
yeah.
How does that interact with funding, so that you've received funding for project A, and then at some point it wants to become something
project
else?
Project Z.
Yeah.
I think that's where the research and development nature of your first application or A application comes into play. It's completely... you know, normal to say, okay, this funding is specifically to explore this, and we're going to explore it thoroughly, and that's where the substance and quality comes in, but it may not go in the direction we're expecting it to, and that's okay. And I think possibly the most savage situation that you could find yourself in is actually delivering an R&D platform to an audience where it's still in that phase of discovering what it is. But that's the best learning curve as well. And it's at that point, I think, when you start encountering audiences for the first time, that you think about, you know, the tangent somewhere else.
What's the kind of timescales around applying? So from the moment you think, I'm going to apply for funding for this project, assuming the funding application is successful, like, what is that length of pit time?
Well, from applying, if you're applying for sort of under 15k, it's a 6-week wait, and you'll try hard not to think about it in those 6 weeks, but it's also a great breathing space to actually give yourself a lead in to thinking, if this does happen and when it does happen, thinking positively, I will have to contact so many people in the first week to, you know, push all of the pieces into place.
In terms of, I mean, you were talking about how you can get funding for projects which are specifically kind of R&D focused.
Yeah.
But how much in terms of sort of outcomes and results are built into the funding and the application in the first place?
how many people are you intending to reach, you know, which any marginalized groups, how are you pushing your boundaries artistically, innovation, mm-hmm. how are you increasing artistic quality in your work, so are you learning a new skill to, you know, put into the public domain. So yes, I think you need ballpark areas to work with, for yeah. sure.
Most of our listeners obviously are going to be writers. Is the Arts Council kind of open to anything almost, or are there particular areas that are appropriate for funding?
I think essentially, and obviously I'm not psychic when it comes to the Arts Council, but I've done pretty okay so far. I think you have to provide something potentially new, because they're interested in furthering the arts than just repeating, mm-hmm. repeating patterns in the arts. And obviously there's a place for things that work. You know, pantomime has a place in our culture. It's very important. It gets school children into the theatre, but you wouldn't necessarily get an Arts Council grant to do a pantomime, to produce a pantomime.
Mm-hmm. In terms of your work over the years, like how would you see your career being if arts funding in this country wasn't a thing?
I wouldn't have one. and, you know, I'm still chipping away very hard at the coalface, mm-hmm. to bring my work more into public consciousness. But, you know, I certainly don't come from a background where there's any extra monetary support other than my income. Mm-hmm. And this is why when you're creating an application, you're really thinking about your capacity. How much time can I fund? How valuable is my time? How can I find extra income out of this activity, create extra income out of this activity to ensure that the next one can happen? In terms of making sure that people who aren't privileged in the first instance have a shot at making professional work, it's absolutely essential. And even then it's challenging, because in between projects, if you're freelancing, you know, how do you fill those gaps? Mm-hmm. And this is why I've ended up having quite a multifarious kind of portfolio career in terms of freelance producing and PR and things like this. So everyone will find a different way of making it work, but I think it's important to think creatively about that as well.
Mm-hmm. In terms of arts funding, when we're living in challenging economic times.
Mm, austerity Britain.
Arts funding can very easily become a scapegoat that becomes the thing that's cut first, because it doesn't deliver obvious benefits. But I was wondering, what's your take on what art contributes to
quality of life? Quality of life. We're not living in communist Russia. You know, we value whole human beings. We try to educate rounded human beings. What would be the point of educating people to, you know, have, you know, layers if they're just economic products, you know? And obviously, art has a function in, it's that thing of raising up a mirror to society, non-theatre quote. How do we reflect on what's going on around us? Obviously, in the political sphere, everyone has an agenda, but in the artistic sphere, that can be kind of softened a bit and explored more. And, you know, we have freedom of speech. So in terms of understanding the situations we're in, mm-hmm. and quality of life, this is why we need the arts and culture. Not to mention all of the health benefits that have been massively researched recently. And yeah, if you want to read reams about that, I'm sure you can go on the Arts Council website.
Mm-hmm. So at the moment you're approaching, is it the end of the Lives of F project, or obviously you've got the launch of the materials publicly coming up next year.
Yeah.
Does that mark the end of the project, or is that the beginning of the next phase? How do you see it?
I think it's the beginning of the new tangent with it. I think it has many lives. And the multi-platform effect I'm probably going to explore through creating a live piece from the films, and then perhaps adding live music into the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So finding new dimensions, new semantics, new meanings from putting different elements together. And I've only written the life of F, Freddie and Effie, up to the age of, well, my age, mid-30s. So at some point I'd like to write beyond that, but perhaps as I get a bit older.
So this could be an ongoing thing for quite some
time. I'm too attached to them to let them go. So yeah, I want to know what happens to these millennials. And I think we leave them just at the point where they're looking outside of themselves and their preoccupations, not to stereotype millennials, but you know, beyond Brexit and in a massive refugee crisis to a larger world. And how do they look after other people? And what is the significance of looking after people other than themselves in their lives? So that's where I'm leaving them. And then maybe I'll just have to gain more life experience before taking them into the next phase, I don't know.
Excellent. And in the meantime, do you already have other projects starting to bubble up that may require funding?
yes. I'm interested in using my company, Stream Lyric, as a sort of vehicle for commissioning other writers and artists of different disciplines. So I anticipate applying for funding to make sure that there's some new digital literature in the ether, perhaps, maybe.
Watch this space.
But also another aspect of this last project was writing for radio and theatre. And I used different sources of stimuli and material for those two different products as well. So there is a radio play and there is a theatre piece ready to pop out should I find collaborators to help me make that happen.
Excellent. And if people want to find out more about Lives of F, where should they go? I know at the moment it's not quite released.
Yeah.
But you have a website with a kind of development blog.
I do have
there.
A blog on my website, which is shamefully lacking updates. But yeah, tamsinflower.co.uk and streamlyric.co.uk should have in the blog section some exciting updates. Otherwise, I've got a YouTube channel where all of the film poems, or poetry films, I should say, will be Twitter, Facebook, etc., etc. And I'll be building on these as the year goes on.
Fantastic. Well, we'll put links to all of that down in the show
notes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tamsin, for coming in
and
talking to us.
Cheers. It's been lovely.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to Tamsin for dropping by. Please do subscribe, rate and review the podcast over on iTunes, Stitcher or wherever you happen to be listening. If you have writer friends, do let them know about us. This is actually the last podcast of 2018, as we're going to be taking a break over the Christmas period. We will of course be back in 2019 with all sorts of exciting episodes. To make sure you don't miss them or any of our other upcoming writing opportunities and events, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Writers Centre. Like us on our Facebook page and sign up to our newsletter at nationalcentreforwriting.org.uk. Thanks to all of you who have tuned into the show this year. I hope you all have a lovely final chapter of 2018, and I will catch you in the new year.